Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
65 Shloka Anusharan Summary of the verses. Verses 1 to 15, Vidura returns from pilgrimage. Verses 16 to 28, Vidura's instructions to Dhritarashtra. Verses 29 to 37, Dhritarashtra leaves home. Verses 38 to 50, Sri Narad Muni's arrival and his instructions to Maharaj Yudhishthira. Verses 51 to 60, Narad Muni reveals that Dhritarashtra will meet a glorious death. Verses 1 to 15, Vidura returns from pilgrimage. In the opening sections, in the opening section of verses, Suta Goswami describes how Vidura returns to Hastinapur after receiving spiritual knowledge from Maitreya Muni. Maharaj Yudhishthira questions Vidura about his travels, and Vidura, after applying, stays in Hastinapur for some time. Now Suta Goswami draws the attention of Shonaka Rishi and the sages to the movements of the saintly Vidura on his pilgrimage to holy places, where great sages gather for satsang. The purport to 1.13.1 relates the story of Vidura's life in brief, his going on pilgrimage after being ejected by Duryodhana from the core of a household, will serve a key role in Canto 3. Okay, so what's interesting is that here, now it's mentioning that Suta Goswami is drawing the attention of the sages to Vidura. So we have both the dynamic here of the speaker speaking according, means he's making a presentation, and then there are the questions, right? So these questions very much have a effect on the direction of the conversation. But at the same time, as the speaker also has directions or things he wants to bring out. But in other words, they'll be relevant for the understanding of the audience. At the same time, it's not what the audience wants to know that's valuable in here, because it's Shonaka Rishi, so it'll always be valuable. Right? So that's the point. Valuable. That's the perfect questions, perfect answers. Right? You get. You know, as my mother said, ask a stupid question, get a stupid answer. Right? You know, so this is about perfect questions, perfect answers, right?
Yes.
Yeah. While traveling on a pilgrimage, Vidura received knowledge of the destination of the self from the great sage Maitreya, and then returned to Hastinapur. He became as well versed in the subject as he desired. Right? So how much he wanted to know, he learned. Right. And we know that Vidura is very qualified, so that would be quite a substantial amount. After asking various questions and becoming established in the transcendental loving service of Lord Krishna, Vidura retired from putting questions to Maitreya Muni. So here is also you have this aspect of he's how much he desired, and he became established in devotional service. So how much questions someone has to ask to get established in devotional service, that's the right amount. Yes. Right? Someone may be more analytical, they'll ask more, someone less, they'll ask less. But the point is that you get established in pure devotional service. That's how much you should know about the subject matter. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's unlimited. Krishna is unlimited. He is knowledge.
Yes.
So therefore, there's no end of this knowledge. right? Mm. So yes, please.
Bhavananda said, the most important question you can ask is the question that will remove your doubt so you can move forward.
Yes. So then he's asking various questions. He became established. So that means his establishment means that you have to deal with whatever it is that is getting in the way of becoming established, right? So so his questions then did that. Then he retired from putting questions. Yes.
So this also deals with karma and jnana, not too little, not too much.
Karma and jnana means anything. It's to become means you have a principle of becoming established, just like you have a fruit of worker, and he's very stable, steady, has his goals, moving forward. Or you have the jnani, you know, he's same thing, stable, steady, he's studying, he has regular things, regular understanding, regular application. It's a principle. The point is, since you have to do this, if you want to be successful, you have to do this anyway. So now, why making that same endeavor, why would you settle for fruit of activities, fruit of results, or liberation when you can get bhakti for the same endeavor? That's the point, is that Krishna consciousness is not a different endeavor. It's the same endeavor. Right? It's the same endeavor. The difference is we're not used to making an endeavor for something transcendental. Right? We're used to karma and jnana. That's all we've done since time immemorial. We've been fruit of workers or intellectuals. That's all we've done. So we move back and forth from this, because you taste one for a while and then it has weaknesses. It gets boring, so you go into the other. It has weaknesses. So you just go back and forth. That's all you do. It's like the pendulum swing, right? It's just the duality means. Duality means you have to go this side, have to go that side. Right? But Krishna is non-dual. Therefore, that means this side, that side. You can unlimitedly taste the variety, and you're still dealing with the same thing. So that's consistent. Okay? So the point is that we're not used to this endeavor, because the idea of having identity, making an endeavor to get a result, becoming pleased, you know, in the association of others, that's what's going on in the spiritual world. All it is that's reflected here. But it's a perverted reflection, because now instead of it being about the Lord and the devotees, now it's about ourselves. Right, you can throw in the devotees and throw in, you know, the Lord, you know, as long as it's about us. Yes. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
It's just that he became as well versed in the subjects as he desired.
Yes.
So does it come down to having the desire?
Yes.
Versus, let's say, one can be more intelligent than another. So would the desire outweigh the inherent?
On one level, yes, you can take it like that also. Is that even if one doesn't have a great, let's say, intellectual ability, if one has the desire, then by the Lord's grace, one it will be there. But the point is it's not that, oh, everybody else is so smart, I also want to be smart. That's not the point. It's that one wants to understand so that one can situate oneself in pure devotional service. That's the desire, is to become situated in pure devotional service. So how much knowledge it takes to get that. Right, like the knowledge of the gopis. What does it take for them to become established in, you know, fixed in pure devotional service? Right? He's so attractive, he's so beautiful, so youthful, such a sweet smile, like that. It's a lovely boy, you know, flute. You know, that's that knowledge that they require. You know what I'm saying? So this is to get established. Now, the discussions about the Lord and hearing about the Lord, that you'll never become satiated. Because it's so good. Here, as he desired to remove whatever would be considered obstacles to become established. Right? We're dealing with very advanced personalities here, but the principle is the same. It's always the same. As we see, if we're discussing the neophyte level, the madhyama level, the uttama level, we see the functions are the same. Right? That's always the same. It's just where the emphasis is, where the focus is, how much developed. Like hearing what is our position and our nature and the Lord's nature, the relationship with the Lord, you know, having that, being fixed in that, having that faith, that starts from the very beginning, but that's the first stage of bhava. The difference is that who you are is I'm servant of the Lord in this particular realm. Right? Does that make sense? In this particular mood. Right? So you have a spiritual form rather than the material form. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of how developed it is. You're always trying to remember Krishna, but in that stage, and that comes to samadhi. Right? Does that make sense? You always serve under the Vaishnavas. We are, you know, rag anuga. Right? But there it attains that position of maturity where now we're associating with those eternal associates and following their mood. Right? And then we're supposed to develop our love for Krishna. You actually do. You understand? So it's just a matter of how much these principles are developed. So if they're just beginning, that's called neophyte. They're a little bit more, they become more stable and more like this, then it's called madhyama. Right? It's coming now to an advanced platform, then it's called uttama. Yes. So much sense. Well, actually, we used to say the madhyama is the advanced platform. Now it's really advanced.
Right.
Yes.
To be established means it depends of the connection with Krishna.
Yes, means here is established in transcendental loving service to the Lord. So he's always consistent in that, whatever his level of realization.
It means there is some nishtha.
It means it's this aspect of nishtha, but we know by the personalities involved here, then being stable, then we're working in this uttama platform. You know, as we had before, as Maharaj Cricket, we're dealing with uttamas here. But as we said, the process is the same. You're just adjusting with the devotion, with the being involved in the pastimes. Then you're fixed in that. Then you actually become, you know, fully absorbed and develop love for Krishna. It's the same thing. You always get three stages, right? Whatever you're doing, there's preliminaries, there's the main thing, there's the result. Right, or the conclusion. You're always going to have, no matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter here in the spiritual world. Right? It means Mother Jashoda, you know, makes arrangements for lunch, you know, and the cooks lunch, then serves lunch to Krishna, and then makes whatever it is afterwards. So it's always the same. It's just a matter of which level it is and what benefit you're getting. You know what I'm saying? So within spiritual, then that's the main discussion. But we discuss other things if we think there's something in material. Right? So here it can even be becoming well versed and established means on the transcendental platform the questions are there. Right? Well, so we'll see. That means the point in the third canto, then we'll see. Like that. Okay. Yes.
Vidura went on pilgrimage because he was in the household with Vidura and felt contaminated. So then he came back at the time asking Vidura questions when he heard that everybody had left at Prabhash.
Oh, okay.
So then his questions, he was starting to ask what's happened to everybody, but he asked Uddhava. Uddhava said, go and see Maitreya. And then when he met Maitreya, he wasn't sure that he was fully conversant with the same truths that Uddhava said. So he asked him different questions. And he said, all right, I'm already satiated with the Mahabharata topics. Just let me hear about Krishna. So then when he heard enough about Krishna, then he knew that.
Verses 1 and 2. Srila Vishwanath Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, having asked sufficient questions to Maitreya, Vidura ceased asking any more when he heard about pure devotion to Govinda. He gave up questioning, means he did not have any more desires to hear further, because all other questions are useless once bhakti has appeared. Returning at last to Hastinapur, capital of the victorious Pancha Pandavas, he was joyfully received by the Pandavas. Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti, Kripa, and many others who hurried to meet him. Footnote 32. In his purports to 113.3-4, Srila Prabhupada relates at some length the life stories of Gandhari, Prita, Kunti, Draupadi, and Subhadra, great Vaishnavis, all. Their delight upon seeing this pure-hearted devotee of the Lord was so great, it appeared as if they had regained their consciousness after a long period. While offering obeisances or embracing Vidura, according to their relationship, everyone shed tears of affection due to relief from the anxiety of long separation. Here's an important key. According to their relationship, offering obeisances or embracing according to their relationship. Now, you're dealing with these very great devotees here, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this idea that there's at some point when one doesn't follow etiquette, right? Mm. It just doesn't exist. Mm. Right? If you want to act as a Paramahamsa, yes, but then you don't function in the social context. But if you're working within the social context, then it doesn't matter what stage, etiquette always remains. It never goes away. Right? Yes.
It's interesting, Srila Prabhupada in the purport, he says also that some people offered obeisances and then embraced the Dua. They did both.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yes.
Kind of
nice. You know, so you'd have... In other words, you have that element of junior, but there's a certain amount of intimacy,
yeah,
like that. Because in you have these combinations, like even within the friends of Krishna, you have the seniors, the juniors, the equals, and then the intimate. You know, so you're going to have any of that also. With you know, parental, there'll be parental but more formal, parental more intimate. You know, servitors more formal, servitors more intimate. You know, so you always have. While offering obeisances or embracing Vidura according to the relationship, everyone shed tears of affection due to relief from the anxiety of long separation. Vidura was sumptuously fed and permitted sufficient rest. Then Yudhishthira Maharaj began to speak to him, and all who were present there listened. Right? So there's a reception at initial, like that, that's going to be there. But it's not dragged out. Then there's eating, there's resting in that. Then you have, you know, very nice and everyone can sit nicely. Does that make sense? It's not that, you know, he comes in and then immediately he has to give a class, lead a fabulous kirtan, speak to all the devotees, meet all the managers, work out all the problems, everything like this, and then it's time to get in the car and leave. But of course, they send him a little pack, to, you know, something with them. Yeah, something like that. You should.
Hypothetical example, of course.
Yes. Yeah. No, yes, of course. We're just throwing that up. Okay. That's 3-7. In his purport to 113.7, Srila Prabhupada stresses the importance of following the proper etiquette in receiving a guest. King Yudhishthira was expert in reception also, even in the case of his family members. Because we've seen the formal, but now within family members he is. So all this makes for a complete social experience. Otherwise, some people do well in one and one in the other, but he was expert in both. Therefore, he's the emperor.
Yes.
Vidura was well received by all the family members by exchange of embraces and obeisances. After that, bathing and arrangements for a sumptuous dinner were made. And then he was given, like here, it just mentions he was fed. So it doesn't, because the point is it's understood that you're going to take a bath, then eat. Right? You know? Yeah. For a sumptuous dinner were made, and then he was given sufficient rest. Right here. And dinner means, when it says sumptuous, it's a full meal, the main meal. So it doesn't matter the time of the day. Does that make sense? Dinner means, in the West, generally dinner is at nighttime. So we take that dinner means a nighttime meal. No, dinner actually means the main meal. That's its origin. Right? I'm not sure what the Latin is, but it goes back to there. So, because... In the modern, you know, kind of corporate world, you get up in the morning with just enough time to get out the door, maybe eat some cereal. Like I remember one person was saying that while they're being dropped off at school in their limo, right, they learned how to have their bowl of cereal, and as the car stops, to lean forward as it goes accelerating, so they could eat and just simultaneously do all that on the way to school. So they ate their cereal in the car, right? And then, you know, there may be something, you know, whatever it is, a sandwich or this or that here and there at lunch. And so the only actual meal you can actually prepare and sit down and eat is dinner, right, at night. But otherwise, in some families that, you know, more aristocratic or this kind of thing, dinner is lunch.
Yes.
And then the smaller meal, in the that's supper.
Yes.
Right? So the main meal is dinner, the secondary meal is supper. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Then the time of day, breakfast, lunch, you know, or I don't know, what do you call it at night? You know, that's the problem. You know, but these set time of day. You know, so that's the... Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like in Henry VIII's court, dinner was at 10 in the morning, supper was at 4.
You know, what's after
supper? Nothing. You're on your own. Snacks. And that's what the court provided.
You know. Same in some temples. Same in some temples.
Yeah, yes. I mean, 2 times a day eating is generally the recommendation of major meals. You know, in between it should be snacks, because we say 3 times a day eating, but most of them are snacks. A bowl of cereal is a snack, it's not a meal.
Right. As you said that it's assumed before he was fed that he bathed. Is there some injunction about you shouldn't eat unless you bathe?
You should be clean. He's just come from traveling.
Yeah.
If you're in the house, that may be another thing. You've already bathed in the morning, and then, you know, so many hours later it's breakfast. But definitely you take a bath before lunch. And you take a bath in the evening, the Sunday, and after the Sunday eat, because you don't eat at the Sundays. Right? Does that make sense? So in the morning you use that time for spiritual activities. Right? Then there's breakfast. Then noontime you take your bath, you know, you have your noon Gayatris and that. Then you have lunch. And then evening you don't eat during the Sunday, so you eat after. Now, you can have snacks before, but you would eat after. So you take your bath at that time. So the natural is taking 3 baths a day or 2 baths a day. But here he's just come from traveling. So naturally, you come from traveling, so a bath is a good thing. Right? Is that okay?
Yeah.
After finishing his rest, he was offered a comfortable place to sit. And then the king began to talk about all happenings, both family and otherwise. That is the proper way to receive a beloved friend, or even an enemy. According to Indian moral codes, even an enemy received at home should be so well received that he will not feel any fearful situation. Because right? Otherwise, then who knows what they'll be plotting about. An enemy is always afraid of his enemy, but this should not be so when he is received at home by his enemy. In other words, enemy business is for somewhere else. You know, home is for, you know, proper dealings and all that. And it also means here's you're receiving, and so them as a guest, they should behave as such. Right? This means that a person, when received at home, should be treated as a relative. So what to speak of a family member like Vidura, who was a well-wisher for all the members of the family. Right? So for an enemy, it'll be all done nicely, though it may be formal, but it'll be done nicely. So then with the family member, someone close, then it has that plus the affection. Right?
Yes.
Thus Yudhishthira began, does that make sense? Right? In other words, it's not the only if there's affection. The modern scenario is if you have affection, you deal nicely. You don't have affection, you don't deal nicely. Here you're supposed to deal nicely with everybody. Then those who have affection for, that's then that same form is a medium for expressing that affection.
Modern man would say that's phony. That's not honest.
The thing is, it's phony to say it's phony.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know, oh, all this formality, that's so fun. That's what people like. You know, it's phony to say it's, we don't like formality. Oh, we don't do it like that. It's kind of like it's an identity. How is that an identity?
Yeah.
We're the guys that don't do any formality. I mean, of course, it means you can all say, you know, if you want to shorten it down, you say Dutch, right? But, you know, like that.
That's true.
No? Yeah. Because I'm saying this because I heard one say, those, you know, those Germans are so formal. We don't get into any of that stuff. You know, we just, you know, we're straightforward.
Yeah.
None of that. You know. But that itself is also an upadhi. The point is it's all. It's a matter of the conditioned soul groups together with others who their conditioning you can relate to. Because you're supposed to be comfortable. So even in the association of devotees, you should be comfortable.
Yes.
Right? Because here you're going to discuss so many things.
Yes.
Krishna consciousness, how you're acting and stuff. So let's say you want to discuss your lifestyle. You know, something of your lifestyle with someone else that you're trying to see how to connect it to Krishna and all that. Now, if you have someone like-minded, you can mention the activity you're doing. And then they'll understand, and then you can discuss how to connect it to Krishna. If you speak with someone who's not of a similar nature, just that, oh, you're doing that, oh, that's so crazy. You know, that's not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is how to connect it to Krishna, not whether it's crazy or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just that, therefore, like-minded. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the... Does that make sense? So if there's a common value system, means, of course, Krishna consciousness is common. But if there's a common value system, then that works very neatly and nicely in a very broad range of devotees. If there's not a common value system on the social platform, right, or it's very minimal, then you'll have various groups because they will have their standards. But as long as Krishna consciousness is the main, then you can relate with any devotee on that platform. But when it comes to the social, you have to stay within that group that you can actually relate with. Right? Does that make sense? You know, this is taking lead from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It says, doesn't matter you're a devotee, when you get married, you have to marry your own natured kind of person. You know, it's not, oh, we're not the body, we marry anybody. No, you still have to stay within your own people.
Marry anybody. Marry anybody. It just sounds funny.
Somebody's got to marry anybody. Nobody's going to marry. And if nobody will marry anybody, that's also okay. You know, because if you're a nobody or just an anybody, you're kind of about the same social status. So they're probably well matched.
Let's go with that. Hmm.
Yes.
What also happened to Vidura is interesting because he married the lady from the same social background.
Yes, yes, yes. And they specifically went out of the way to see. You know, so he's from a very... In other words, he's born of a Shudrani of a very aristocratic family. So they found a girl who was a Shudrani of a very aristocratic family. Like that. Yeah, so that's the whole point. Is it the same? Because what drives you nuts is that you're living in a place with a person. You know, nowadays, much of it's in one room. You know, like that. You know, studios are pretty common these days. Like that. You know. And that, and so then, unless there's a very similar nature, everything you do is going to drive the other person nuts. You know, I see people; they're taking off their clothes, let's say, to take a bath, and then they're going to in 5 minutes put them back on. They take them all off, each one of the pieces. They fold nicely and put nicely. Then they go take the bath. They come back, then take it and put it back on. And most people just kind of take it off, and you're fortunate if they'll put it in one pile. You know, don't take it off all, or at least you can see a line of it up to the bathroom. And as they come out of the bathroom, then they put it on, and it's, you know, that way you don't get it mixed up right there in order. Right? So, in other words, someone who does that, then it's the same. Just as long as they're considered enough not to drop their stuff on top of your stuff in the line on the way to the bathroom. Otherwise, then you got to, you know, yeah,
you
look for make it a parallel thing. And that's romantic, right? Yeah, so does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that we take it that we're not the body, it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter for the soul. Yes, it's true, but then the soul doesn't get married. The soul doesn't need social prestige. It doesn't need power. It doesn't need money. It doesn't need facility. It only needs love for Krishna. So if you're dealing in these areas have their dharma. That's the difference, is we take it, dharma, meaning religion, means the ritual when you go to your place of worship that once a week. Right? You know, you walk in, you know, you wear your nice clothes, you know, you talk to everybody outside in the parking lot, and then you come up and the pastor's at the door, you say hello, and then you go in, and then, okay, those guys over there, let's sit this side, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And then you sit there, and then, you know, they sing a song, something is read, something is said, you know, like that, depending on what it is, they blow a horn or not, or, you know, pass around a cup of wine, something like this. And then when they're done, then everybody gets up and goes back to the door, sees whoever it is, and then goes back out to the parking lot, gets in the car, and leaves. Okay, so that is religion, you know, very ritualistic, right? So... The point is dharma means the nature of anything, how it works, right? You have something, you know, this Zoom thingy here. It has a nature. It works in a certain way. Its dharma is it can record things, right? But it can only record things in certain situations, right? It means if you want to record someone talking, but you keep the thing in your room, you know, on the shelf, may not work, So it has to be within a proximity. It has to be turned on. It has to have batteries. Right? You know, all these different things. That's Dharma. It's the nature of something. We don't think in that broad context. Right? So the point is the body has a Dharma. The duties that it does, it has a Dharma. Right? The social things, there's Dharma. So where may not be the body, but as we're pointing out here, and why these are given here, if these were given with ordinary people, we'd say, yeah, that's for them, but we're devotees. You're not going to get more devotee than Maharaj Yudhishthira and Vidura. You're not going to get more religious than these two, right? Here you have Dharmaraj himself and his son, right? You're not going to get more religious than this anywhere in the universe. It's just not going to happen. You know?
Pretty good.
Right? Yeah, not bad, not bad. You know, you could say universal class.
Yes.
Here, yes.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
So, Dharma and nature is coming more from Krishna, and mentality is more materialistic.
I'm not sure, I don't understand the context. Because Dharma means everything. It means what is the mentality, what is the skills, what is the interest, where you like to be. You know, it's like you have a particular bird and it likes to be in this place. Take it to a place hotter or colder or wetter or drier and it won't like it. It has a Dharma.
I was trying to understand the difference between the nature of someone and the mentality, what the difference was.
Mentality is part of nature.
Okay.
Right? Nature means guna and karma. It means what are their skills and what's their mood.
Okay.
Right? That's why it's the modern thing is if I can do the same skill as someone else, then it's my right to be able to do it. But it's not a matter of that. It's that you have to have the guna also. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that's the whole, you have to have the qualities.
What's guna?
Guna, the qualities, the mood. Just like, let's say, the Brahmin teaches, but it's not about money, it's about knowledge. Right? Let's say Vaishnav is running an educational institution. You pay the money, you can stay in the class. For the Brahmin, it's not about the money, it's that you actually have an interest. Right? You know, you don't stand up and yell and scream some incoherent stuff halfway through every day. Right? You know, so, like that. You know, unless it's well timed, then that's when you take your break. You know, so. Like that. Oh, excuse me. Yeah. Does that make sense? So, that's why the Brahmin teaches, but the Vaishya doesn't. Right? But the Brahmin won't be able to get in there and deal in business, because in business it's half truth, half lie. Not that, oh no, but we should have perfect business where it's all truthful. No, it doesn't work like that, because people, you're doing business means you're dealing with profit. That means you're dealing with another person in the same realm of profit. And everybody wants profit. So if you tell them the truth, they'll take advantage of that for their own profit, and you'll make no profit, so it's not business. You know, charity maybe, but not business. So that's why business is called half-truth, half-lie. You want just pure, you know, Vaishya, you know, truth, it's called a piece of dirt, and plowing and planting things like that, you know, or a cow. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So all this kind of modern stuff, it's bogus. Because it doesn't exist. Now, you don't go beyond. It shouldn't be, you know, how you say 75% lie and 25%, you know what I'm saying? That's not right. It's 50-50.
What's the Sanskrit word for that?
Satyanrita. It means half truth, half lie. Like that. Because you can't tell them how much it costs. Otherwise, where's the profit? You know?
Or you can tell him how much it costs, it just can't be that number.
Be the accurate number.
For you, I make no profit.
You have to work out what that number is. Yeah. That's the, for you, that's the calculating like that, 100 rupees. It's wild.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the proper way. And so here's Yudhishthira applying it to Dharmaraj. So now you know it's right. Vidura is comfortable with it. He's Dharma. Otherwise, he would have said something. You know, he's the uncle. He would have corrected him and all that. But it's proper. So now we know this is the example. They're doing it on a very, royal level. So we may do it on a simple level, you know. Does that make sense? You know, so sumptuous means whatever good you have. Right? That's the best you have. So then for, you know, Yudhishthira, then that would be very sumptuous. Right? In that kind of standard. But whatever it is, if they're very simple in that, then it's sumptuous according to that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that, you know. So for what was it? Shruta Dev, you know, sumptuous was banana peel. Like that. They were good quality banana peels. Right? Don't worry, you're not going to do that. Okay. This means a person, when received at home, should be treated as a relative, because this is ashram. Right?
Yes.
So what to speak of, so ashram means shelter, what to speak of a family member like Vidura, who is a well-wisher for all the members of the family. Thus, Yudhishthira Maharaj began to speak in the presence of all the other members. Then you have that formal, you get together, you do all the different things, you know. Now, this is the order, but you have to also know if you have families who are trained, it'll work in this order. But for many people, having the meal is kind of the end of the line, and then everybody wants to do their own thing. I found that out. We went to one wealthy person's house, like that. It was in, I think, London, yeah. And so then before the meal, then, you know, all the family came, everybody sat, you know, and then they started asking a few questions, and then about 10 minutes later, then someone came and informed that the lunch was ready. And so then it was that, so shall we continue talking or you want to take lunch? So I thought, well, you know, such a nice kind of group, you know, since lunch is ready, let's take lunch, then we can sit again and all that. We didn't sit again. It just didn't happen. So in other words, when you have opportunities to speak Krishna conscious and they're willing to do it, take it.
Yeah.
Even if it's in the wrong order, right? You know, and then after the meal, then if they want to know if you want to take a bath. Okay. You know, you work it all out. You know. Okay. You know what I'm saying? But these are the elements. Right? There's the traditional order, and then there's, how do you say it? What was it? And you say the potpourri or what?
Potpourri.
Potpourri. Potpourri. Yeah. And a little mixed. A little dry, but good smelling. And, okay. Where's 33? Oh, here it is. Maharaj Yudhishthira said, "My dear uncle, do you remember how you, your partiality, like the wings of a bird, saved us along with our mother from all sorts of calamities?" Footnote 33. In his purport to 113.8, Srila Prabhupada details the calamities Yudhishthira only hints at. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, Dhritarashtra's policy was peaceful annihilation of his nephews. Now that sounds good.
Yes.
Peaceful annihilation. That's quite well presented. And therefore he ordered Purochana to build a house at Varanavata. And when the building was finished, Dhritarashtra desired that his brother's family live there for some time. When the Pandavas were going there in the presence of the members of the royal family, Vidura tactfully gave instructions to the Pandavas about the future plan of Dhritarashtra. This is specifically described in the Mahabharata, Adiparva 1.1.14. He indirectly hinted, because it mentions there that he spoke in Malecha language.
Yes.
You know, so he might have said it in English or something. Yeah. Like that. A weapon not made of steel or any other material element can be more than sharp. Okay, can more than sharp to kill an enemy. And he who knows this is never killed. That is to say, he hinted that the party of the Pandavas was being sent to Varanavata to be killed. And thus he warned Yudhishthira to be very careful in their new residential palace. He also gave indications of fire and said that fire cannot extinguish the soul, but can annihilate the material body. But one who protects the soul can live. Later on, Vidura came in disguise to the Pandavas and informed them that the housekeeper was going to set fire to the house on the 14th night of the waning moon. Oh, that was Vidura. His Mahabharata doesn't specifically say it at that point.
Okay.
You just think it was just a messenger. It was an intrigue of Dhritarashtra that the Pandavas might die altogether with their mother. There are many such instances of calamities, and in each of them, Vidura gave protection to the Pandavas. On one hand, he also said that the rats escaped through a hole. So in other words, he gave all these disjointed points that sound like they could be philosophy or this or that. No one knows what he's talking about. Plus, he's talking in a Malecha language. Okay. There are many such instances of calamities, and in each of them, Vidura gave protection to the Pandavas on one hand. And on the other hand, he tried to restrain his brother Dhritarashtra from such intriguing policies. Therefore, he was always partial to the Pandavas, just as a bird protects its eggs by its wing. So, in other words, if he wasn't speaking, then Dhritarashtra would be totally unbridled. So it's not that they weren't making an endeavor to get rid of the Pandavas, but because there was that restraint from the side of Vidura, it wasn't as comfortably, inspirational as they could get. Does that make sense? You know, if it's not considered, just like this, on international rules, then certain things aren't good. There's restraint. You're not supposed to deal with people badly. It happens, but generally it's much more narrow. Right? But if you have an area where they don't worry about laws like that, they get very inspired on how to harass and bother people. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, it balances. So you reduce it down to the minimum you can get it, and then you protect the Pandavas from that. So you have to work on both sides.
Yes. It seems that the Lord and his devotees, they have this partiality.
Yes. Partiality is natural. But it's a reciprocation of affection. In other words, the Lord maintains everyone. But as those who reciprocate with him on a personal level, then he reciprocates with them personally. So that partiality is still logical. It's not just a sentiment. It has a basis that you're dealing that way. Therefore, Krishna responds that way. It's natural. Like that. So, like here, we see even an enemy, you receive nicely, you deal nicely. But it doesn't have to be affectionate. It just has to be proper, and they should feel comfortable. Right? So it won't be too stiff. It'll be relaxed, but it's not intimate. Does that make sense? So that's the neutral state. That's how, technically, it said Vaishnava should deal with everybody like that, because that's how the Lord deals with everybody. Then those who have that affection, that's reciprocated. Because they don't have reciprocation, then the etiquette is simply the medium of exchange. But now if there's affection, you add that onto the medium. Right? There's this idea, if there's affection, we don't need the medium. But then the problem is in the modern society, all the mediums are gotten rid of. How do you interact? What's the basis? Right? There's no difference, there's no individuality, there's no, everything is, shared but not on from the affectionate point, just by legalistic. And so then where's the basis for interaction? It doesn't leave a lot.
The high five,
yeah, like that with your wife. Like that, One night stands aren't a lot to build on, like that stuff. Does that make sense? So, so that's the whole point of bhakti. It's about the bhakti. That's what we were reading before. Is that the queens are using the medium of feminine interaction, but they were expressing devotion. So the interaction is not what attracted his mind, it's the devotion. But because the devotion is expressed through that feminine interaction, it appears as though it's the feminine interaction that attracts his mind. So that's how the queens will see it. Right? But it's understood, of course, that it's the affection. But the point is you have to be encouraged in your medium. So if you're managing and you feel the management is going well, it's appreciated, something's getting done for Krishna, you're inspired to continue using that as the medium of service. But if you feel it's not working and nothing's working, then you'll choose something else. Is that? That's why it's good to know it back to the science, but at the same time as you appreciate the rasa. This is the problem. The sahajiyas only look at rasa. You know, generally the scholars only look at the tattva. And therefore neither can catch. The point is that the two have to be together. We'll see when we get to the sandarbhas. In the same sentence, he can mention both. You know, a very extreme example in tattva, you know, very technical, and also one in rasa. Because they're balanced, they go together. Means the tattva is an explanation of rasa. Yes. But rasa, because it's a science, therefore it can be explained. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So the sentiment is a sentiment within a structure. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
That's the way we call it. Let's say you have a particular architectural vernacular, right? So then you'll call it a certain kind of you know, it has a Baroque or classical or something. It means it has a particular framework. Now, within that, someone's done a very inspired, you know, design in a particular architectural line. Does that make sense? And that's outstanding. But if it's just, you know, elements from all over the place, then, this idea, I'm free, I do whatever I want, how many of those work? You know, as we discussed, Picasso was formally trained. That's why when he does his, you know, seemingly, breaking all the rules, it's that he breaks all the rules in the right way. Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's a point. I can put this anywhere, right? I put this, let's say this is square. I put this anywhere. Does that look balanced? On the one side?
Yeah.
Yes? No? Okay. You have here, right, that, you know, which is natural. But if you're going to go off from here, then let's say I put it at a quarter. Now, which will look better? That or that? You understand? That's at a third. So that's the rules. So it is... not formal, it's informal, but there's still rules that govern informal.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, if you put yes. You know, two, like, you put like that, right, they're equal. Okay, nice. Okay, it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
But if I put this one off here, you understand? Mm-hmm. It looks better. I mean, in other words, it's... So there's rules.
Yes.
Now, within that, where are you going to do it? I could do it that way, I could do it, you know,
yes,
this way. You know, you understand? But you have to start, one of them's got to be there, then you work off of that.
Yes.
Does that make sense? They're rules. Does that make sense? So everything has rules. Even if we're saying this, you know, just do what you like, there's no such thing. You know? Let's say you give an 8-year-old a musical instrument they've never seen before. Now they'll do something just as they please. Is it good? Do you record it? Do you upload it on, you know, YouTube?
Some do, but
that's true. That's true. But you know, does it get in the musical field, does it get a high rating?
Generally,
no. The moms may love it because it's crazy or something like that. Exactly. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is there's rules. So even if you follow that, then it works. That's the Dharma. So that's what we see whenever Yudhishthira does things. He always sets a perfect example of how you do anything. And so that's why we see him working in all these areas. He's a king, but he's listening to superiors. Yeah. Right? It's always about the citizens. Right? You see him functioning as a king, as a brother, as a husband, right? As a son. You see him in all the different things. Does that make sense? Okay. How did we get there? Did we finish this? We're not here. Okay. While traveling to holy places of pilgrimage, how did you maintain yourself? Devotees like your good self are truly holy places personified, because you always carry the Supreme Lord within your heart. Wherever you travel becomes sanctified. You must have visited Dwarka. And so please tell us how the members of the Yadu dynasty are faring. Vidura replied in a friendly but guarded manner, recounting all of his adventures except the news of the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. He simply could not bear to see the Pandavas distressed at any time. 8:13. Srila Prabhupada explains. According to Niti Shastra, civic laws, one should not speak an unpalatable truth to cause distress to others. Means if it's for their benefit, then you have to speak an unpalatable truth. But you shouldn't speak one to cause distress. Right? Okay. Distress comes upon us in its own way by the laws of nature. So one should not aggravate it by propaganda. It's going to happen anyway, so you don't need to talk about it. For a compassionate soul like Vidura, especially in the dealings with the beloved Pandavas, it was almost impossible to disclose an unpalatable piece of news like the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. Therefore, he purposely refrained from it. Okay, so according to Niti, because Niti is civic laws, means what's dealing at the moment. It means it should get the proper result, but it's only dealing with more of an immediate result. Because you always have to balance between the immediate result and the long-term result, right? In other words, there's the proper mechanics operating of it, you know, that gets the result, you know, what's getting now. There's the element of the long-term, bigger picture in the way of profit, and then there's the biggest picture, which is the nature, the dharma of the thing, and, you know, what are your duties in relationship to it? Does that make sense? Because Niti, you could be doing the thing, get the result, but it's not your duty to do it. So in the modern context, things are being looked at it from, at best, arta, but mostly Niti. Is that I can do this, so I will take advantage and get. But point is dharma is, are you supposed to be doing it? How you're supposed to be doing it? And why you're supposed to be doing it? Because you have a nature, it has a nature, you have a natural relationship, this is how the interaction goes. Yes.
Can we compare arta and niti to naimittic dharma? Can we say like that?
But then what's nitya?
That will be the inherent dharma of any given thing.
Yeah, you could say. Yeah, you're just dealing with it at the moment. Mm. You could, like that. But, yeah. It's just that you're dealing with the mechanics, you're dealing with the overall picture in relation to profit, or you're dealing with the overall picture in relation to nature and duties. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. So that's it. So, it's, you know, one's in goodness, one's in passion, one's in ignorance. Mm. Just by that definition, but at the same time, niti is a proper function. Yes. But on its own, then there's a problem. Yes. Because it will be very external. Yes. But if it's seen in relationship to dharma and artha, then it works nicely.
Mm-hmm. So in support.
Yes, it's supportive. In other words, how to practically apply the dharma, you use niti.
Yes.
Right, so the point is immediately you don't say something, because in the long run, the nature of things, it will be found out about anyway. Right? Somebody's going to say, or they're going to find out, or, you know, Yudhishthira will pick up the newspaper. You see the headlines on the, you know, Dwarka Times or something.
Let it just unfold like that?
Sorry?
Like, would you let it just unfold like that?
Yes, you would. Yeah. Try it. You understand? Because here, what's truth? You understand? Because we take truth as facts. The truth is much greater than facts. Truth is what's supportive of the relationship, you know, a progressive relationship. So you have to see, you know, overall what's going to function in that way. So the nature of it is here, Yudhishthira is not going to be upset if Vidura is acting in this way. Now, Vidura is Dharmaraj himself. So you could be asked, why is he using Niti? Because Niti is just the mechanical part of Dharma. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Just like if you're dealing with a car, then the how it technically functions and works, that's the mechanics. You understand?
Can I give it a situation?
Means is it a real situation, yeah, or this is a situation that you've worked out that
no,
would...
No, it's a real situation that someone came into my... that I got asked to look after, but I just feel like maybe she's doing someone else's duty, and I'm not too
maybe
sure.
Maybe she's doing someone else's duty.
I don't know. Well, it's a very Krishna
what does that mean, doing someone else's duty?
She's not doing her own duty.
No, but what has that got to do with this? Oh, you mean just the unpalatable truth. But what's your relationship with the person?
She got sent to me to look after her a little bit.
So the person you're looking after is doing someone else's duty?
Well, I don't know. She's doing something very Krishna conscious, but she's a mother, and I feel like her husband's already left her because she's so Krishna conscious. And the children maybe are going to be neglected on the same terms. So is that her duty to... Because she's the one...
No, but the point is being Krishna conscious means being Krishna conscious in that situation.
Yes.
So in other words, if she has children, then the duty is to take care of them, raise them in Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
It's not that children are just a paraphernalia. You know what I'm saying?
No,
that's how most people actually look at it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know. Does that make sense? So then the problem is that she'll be nice and Krishna conscious now when the kids just sit there. You know what I'm saying? But later on when they're actually animated, have their own interest in life and would much rather look at Facebook than talk to their mother, then it's all about, oh, but what about the relationship, the interest and all that? That's real situation also. So the point is Krishna conscious means you have to balance all that. If not, if all you want to do is temple program, why have kids? You know what I'm saying? It's much easier to go to Mangal Arati if you don't have kids. I mean, it's just like, you know. Yeah, so therefore, the point is why enter into a duty if you're not willing to connect that duty to Krishna consciousness? This whole thing, well, they get in the way, is no. Her desire gets in the way. The kids, these are living entities that came to be involved in Krishna consciousness. If they're getting in her way, it means what's getting in her way is her own desire for material, right? And do you understand the context we're working from?
Yeah.
How much you've told us. That's what we're working from.
Yes.
So if you take this out of context and say Maharaj said,
no,
and you're only telling us part of the stuff,
then
it's really not going to be appreciated. Okay?
I'm just trying to encourage you to look after
children. No, it's part of it. They come together.
Yeah.
Moms and kids kind of work together. That's why the term mom is there. You know? If it's not, then you use different terms depending upon the time, place, and circumstance. Right?
Okay.
Sutta Goswami continued, there was a mystery to Vidura's identity. He was actually Yamaraj, having been cursed by Mandavya Muni. This great Maharaj consented to live on earth for 100 years as the son of a Shudra. During Yamaraj's absence, Aryama, one of the 12 Adityas, took over his post so that sinful human beings would continue to be judged and punished after their deaths. Like that. And they're all thinking, oh, you don't have to do that. It's okay. You know, yeah, 14:15. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this incident in his commentary to 1:13:15. One time, the soldiers of a king were chasing some thieves. They caught them near Mandavya, who was performing penance. Tying him up along with the thieves, they brought him to the king. By the king's order, they were all impaled. But the king recognized the sage and had him taken down and took care of him. The sage went to Yama and spoke in anger. "Why was I impaled?" Yama replied, "As a boy, you pierced a grasshopper with the tip of a kusa grass as play." Hearing this, Mandavya cursed Yama. "Since you punished so severely, though I was an ignorant boy at the time, you should become a Shudra." Because Shudra means you can't discriminate. So when Prabhupada says you're acting like a Shudra, it doesn't mean you are one, you're just acting like one. It means you're not discriminating. The purpose of Vidura's return to Hastinapur, even after he had accepted the renounced order of life, was to rectify the mentality of his misguided elder brother, Dhritarashtra. At this point, a question may arise. Vidura, who was born in the womb of a Shudra woman, was forbidden even to be a party of royal heritage along with his brothers, Dhritarashtra and Pandu. Then how could he occupy the post of a preacher to instruct such learned kings and kshatriyas as Dhritarashtra and Maharaj Yudhishthira? Srila Prabhupada answers in his purport to 1.13.15. The first answer is that even though it is accepted that he was a Shudra by birth, because he renounced the world for spiritual enlightenment by the authority of Rishi Maitreya and was thoroughly educated by him in transcendental knowledge, he was quite competent to occupy the post of an acharya or spiritual preceptor. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, anyone who is conversant in the transcendental knowledge or the science of Godhead, be he a Brahmin or a Shudra, a householder or a sannyasi, is eligible to become a spiritual master. Even in ordinary moral codes maintained by Chanakya Pandit, the great politician and moralist, there is no harm in taking lessons from a person who may be by birth less than a Shudra. Right? In other words, if they know their subject, you hear from them. Right? So this is one part of the answer. Right? So you're dealing with here is because these aspects, those are coming on the renounced order of life, the knowledge, the study, that's all happening within ashram. It's not part of varna. Right? So Shudra, that's a varna consideration. So within that, then that's there. But within the ashram, then that places them in a higher position. Right? Because the one is a grihastha, and he's the renounced order. Right? So that works that way. At the same time, at the same time, is the kshatriyas are supposed to hear from Brahmins and saintly persons. Does that make sense? So that's why saintly person is mentioned. One, it means the brahminical mentality that's being applied practically in a lifestyle of saintly behavior. Because you can have a Brahmin, as we mentioned before, Vipra, who are karmakantis. So they can give nice advice and everything like that, but they may not know so much about the transcendental science. Generally, the saintly person means the transcendental science is what is known to them. Now, they can be... Brahman means they have to have that conditioning and be qualified at it. Saintly person means they understand transcendental knowledge and are practicing it. It doesn't have anything to do with the background. So kings listen to the saintly persons and the Brahmins. So then here, it puts them nicely into the position.
Yes. Saintly person means Vaishnava. Saintly person means Vaishnava.
Can be. You can also have impersonalists who are saintly. They live the recommended, Vedic lifestyle in renunciation, house like that. They do that. They'll be saintly. They'll get realization of the world and its dealings and its value. So in other words, even from a personalist, you can understand the material world has no value.
Yes.
But you won't get from them that what is of real value is Krishna consciousness. They will say liberation from this is the goal. But that's the situation. Right? Being in the Brahman platform is a situation. It can't be a goal. Does that make sense? Because once you get to a goal, you do something. It's like our goal to liberate the country. But once the country's liberated, then they all just sit back and say, now it's done. They do something. So now they act within the liberation. So they must act within the liberated position. That they don't know. Therefore, then Vaishnava.
Yes. Ashram beats Varna?
It depends what you're dealing with. Okay. You know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But the point is when you're talking about spiritual, it's always superior to social.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as we see, is even if one is nicely situated on the spiritual platform, it doesn't mean the social goes out the window. There's no indication of that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So we have to kind of understand that.
Yes.
Because it's we can, if there's a sense of authority, it means look at it like this. We have the element, there's a sense of authority. And that sense of authority is doing something that we may not appreciate or understand. So we create an alternative lifestyle. Okay? But in that alternative lifestyle, though it's based on you know, freedom, you know, how you say, freedom, liberty, free love, equity, all, you know, whatever it is you want to throw in, all the nice good words, still it has its conformity, right? In other words, they stopped, you know, I think it was, what was his name? Not Ginsberg. Can't remember. But they stopped him at the door, though he was one of the leading members of the hippie community, because he used to wear suits. Because they didn't know he was a hippie, because he didn't dress in the hippie, standard hippie dress code.
Owsley.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the thing is all they do is create another one. It's not that they get rid of it. So in the same way as now that group becomes... takes up devotional service and they can't relate to the Vedic culture, then they'll say, oh, we do that, we were free, we're devotees, we don't have to follow the rules. And what'll they do? They'll create an alternative.
Yes.
And their alternative has, it's just as strict as the rules. The only thing is it's a speculative rather than authoritative.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So it's not that Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, you either follow religion or you'll make your own up. There's no question that you're going to be free if you're conditioned.
Yes.
It just doesn't happen. You know, as we gave example, you know, you can't wash your jeans if you're a Hell's Angel. It just doesn't happen. Yeah, the whole point is like that. So the thing is, everyone will create. So you either follow religion or you'll make a religion. So this principle is because religion has to be followed, whether it's God-given or man-made. The point is religion has to be followed. Because the point is religion comes from God. Therefore, as we've mentioned, that there's punishment for not following your own man-made rules.
Yes.
Right? Even though they're bogus, still, that you have committed to them and don't follow it, that's a fault. Does that make sense? So unless you change your conscience that this is not correct, and switch to something else, then you're not obliged to those rules. But as long as you think those rules are okay, but you just don't want to follow them, then you're obliged to follow. Does that make sense? So, do we see what we're getting here? In other words, we have to be very careful that our conditioning doesn't create alternative rules.
Yes.
That's all.
That's making up the form.
That's the whole thing. Because otherwise, then... that's the tendency. You either follow religion or you'll make religion. Like that. But because we're faulty, our religion won't be very good. Yes?
What does it mean, conversant in transcendental knowledge?
Means he understood it, so he could explain it. Because... yeah. You know, because the important thing is you may understand for yourself, but if you can't explain to others, but at least if you understand yourself, then that's good, you get benefit. But if you can explain it to others, then that's better.
What's the difference between not having good theoretical understanding?
Because conversing generally indicates also there's an understanding, so you can actually use it. But we see here, as it goes along with other definitions... because here, thoroughly educated means the practice. Because in the Vedic, unless you can apply it, it's not thorough. Does that make sense? Like if I say he had a thorough education in horses. So would that indicate only academic, or would that indicate practical? Right. So that's the thing, because the Vedic, it means like that. If he had heard, then you could maybe take it that way. But when it says thoroughly educated, it means he could practice it.
Just one question about the spiritual master. Somebody can become spiritual master without receiving dictation from the super soul. Like it has to be on this platform.
But what do you mean by dictation of the super soul? This is the rub. How do you define that?
It's like free from the modes of nature.
It means that is the ideal level of what you're looking for in the spiritual master. But if you make that as the only definition of a spiritual master, then one has not actually caught what the Shastra says. You know, it's just like, you know, let's say you have... Yeah, no, it's hard to give an example. Previously it would be very easy to give an example, but nowadays it's hard to give an example. Let's say you have something that's accepted as higher quality, and you have something that's not seen as good quality, but it works. Okay? So your first option is going to be the better quality, but if it's not available, then you're going to say, well, therefore, nothing. You know, or is it, you know, give me liberty or give me death. You know, it's like that. No, it's a matter you take what's next. You know what I'm saying? So Uttama is the best. If not, then a Madhyama. If not, then a Neophyte. Because the point is what is it? Is it that they're freed from the modes of nature that instills bhakti?
No, the person has to have
Yes,
the karma to give it.
Krishna is prema. Does the jiva ever, on the platform of tattva, have Krishna? Their energy. Does the energy ever have the generator? The energetic? The electricity, it has the generator. It knows the generator. On tattva, it's not possible. Because Krishna's in another category than us. You know what I'm saying? You have to be very, very careful about this very one-sided, you know, very nice, well-meant, but not very deep understanding of what is Guru. The point is Guru is the via medium for the instructions of Krishna, which comes down through the parampara. And it doesn't say anything about super soul. You've heard from your guru properly. He's heard from his guru. That goes all the way back to Krishna. That's the parampara. It doesn't say anything about paramatma. That's a qualification. If you read all the definitions. Now and again, Prabhupada may mention, but that's a detail within the bigger picture. You understand? So you can talk about prema though you don't have it, because the point is the potency is there in the instructions. Because, you know, bless whoever has said that, guaranteed the person who that came out of their mouth was made a devotee and got faith in Krishna consciousness from a neophyte devotee. And so then to say unless you're an uttam bhakti with prema, otherwise you're not a guru. On a good day, I'd call it nonsense. On a good day. Because this is just... And then the next thing will be, therefore you have to surrender to their guru. That's going to be the next sentence out of the mouth. You know what I'm saying? It's standard. It's just textbook discussion of guru in this way. It's just textbook. So the point is that the qualification is you've heard, you have faith in, you're practicing. The point is we are never the spiritual master. That's the point. We can be the wire through which the current of bhakti flows. Now, the question comes is that, now, what is the quality of the wire? A copper wire is going to do better than a aluminum wire, right? Right? But what you want to avoid is a piece of wood or rubber. You know what I'm saying? That's what it's for. Now, if you can get better than that, silver is better than that, gold, even like that, they're the better conductors. So that's what we're talking about. But to say that if it's not gold, it won't conduct electricity, it's absolutely bogus. That means they don't know electricity. It's that simple. So you have to be very, very careful about these things. They sound great, the mind catches them immediately because they're mundane. Anything mundane, the mind catches like that. Anything spiritual, it's like, you know, years, it's hard to catch. You know what I'm saying? So you have to be very, very careful. It has truth to it. But to say that's the only truth in anything else, then that doesn't even support what Rupa Goswami says. Like that. The point is there is those who are in charge and there's who are the intent. Because if you go by that, you don't have bhakti until you're on the level of prema. So that means even Uttamadikari and Baba, you know, we don't care about. But we see most of our stories are about such people. You know, we're hearing from you know, how you say, Sukadev Goswami, we're hearing from others because they start at that platform. You know what I'm saying? It's a glorious platform. The Madhyama is a glorious platform. This is the problem. It's a neophyte attitude that says this. You understand? Now, Vishwanath makes it very clear that in case you get puffed up and you think that, you know, I'm the great devotee, then it pointed out, no, when you get the prema, then you can say you're the great devotee. Right? So it just keeps a balance. So those who point out the actual position, that's one thing. But those who propagate it as a philosophy, these are neophytes. That's all. Only neophytes do that. My guru is better than your guru. You know? But the reason they surrender is because of the conditioning. They appreciate. You know? They like the simple life. He lives in a grass hut. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You can speak philosophy all day. That's the thing. Then they see that. So he's great. So everybody should be his disciple. But it's not about that. It's about hearing from the right source, which is what they're saying. But they don't understand what is the full definition of right source. They only take those aspects that they can relate to. Does that make sense? So you have to be very careful.
I have some more questions, but I don't want to hijack them.
Yeah, no, if it's in this direction, then it's not. This is not the forum. Then according to Chanakya, there's no harm in taking lessons from a person who may be by birth less than a Shudra. Point is, if their field, they know it, you ask them. You know what I'm saying? You're walking on the beach, and there's a bunch of fishermen, you know, standing waist deep in the water, and you ask them, is the water cold? Then, you know, they're kind of a bit of an authority here, right? You know, you can trust that they will have, you know what I'm saying? Like that. The point is gold can be taken from a dirty place. That's the whole thing. That's where then this philosophy here falls apart. Is that if it's about Krishna, you can take it from anywhere, as long as it's come from bona fide source. So this thing is that, accordingly, that means nothing that comes out of the mouth of anybody who's not a nitya siddha, then is useless. That's the philosophy it comes down to. And of course, don't worry, their guru is a nitya siddha. So hey, so then it, you know, works out.
But they're not.
No, of course not. So that means what they're speaking, that's why it doesn't happen. Yeah, that's the point. Does that make sense? So we have to be very careful to distinguish here between the guru himself, who's not saying this,
yes,
and the disciples who think he is.
Yes.
Right? That's the whole point. Because they'll say, no, but he says. He doesn't say. He'll never say. If he's a Peter, why would he say? Why would he contradict what Prabhupada and the Acharyas say? He wouldn't. Right? That's the point. Pure devotees don't do that. So in other words, they've made this mistake. Yes.
Why do so many of them think like that?
Because then what is it about? It's my guru. I'm connected to him. That's why he's special. that's what Narhari Sarkar says in Krishna Bhajanamrita. It says the neophyte thinks my guru is special because he's connected to me. That's why everybody should listen to him. It's the same thing, you know. My kids. It's paraphernalia. It's my stuff.
Ownership.
Yeah, it's ownership. That's the whole point. That's the mentality. This is one part of the answer. The other is that Vidura was not actually a Shudra. He was to play the part of a so-called Shudra for 100 years, being cursed by Manduka Muni. He was the incarnation of Yamaraj, one of the 12 Mahajanas, on the level with such exalted personalities as Brahma, Narada, Shiva, Kapila, Bhishma, Prahlad, etc. Being a Mahajana is the duty of Yamaraj to preach the cult of devotion to the people of the world, as Narada, Brahma and other Mahajanas do. But Yamaraj is always busy in his platonic kingdom punishing the doers of sinful acts. Yamaraj is deputed by the Lord to a particular planet, some hundreds of thousands of miles away from the planet of Earth, to take away the corrupt souls after death and convict them in accordance with their respective sinful activities. Thus Yamaraj has very little time to take leave from his responsible office for punishing the wrongdoers. There are more wrongdoers than righteous men. Right? I mean, it's just like that. How many saintly people do you hear about? How many blades of grass? How many mosquitoes? Flies? Bacteria? Worms? You understand? You know, you're talking about... Yeah, so that's the problem. Therefore, Yamaraj has to do more work than other demigods who are also authorized agents of the Supreme Lord. But he wanted to preach the glories of the Lord, and therefore, by the will of the Lord, he was cursed by Manduka Muni to come into the world in the incarnation of Vidura and work very hard as a great devotee. Right, so same as you get the same principles, Jaya and Vijaya. They wanted to do that service, but they couldn't in their position. So they had to, by the Lord's arrangement, they're removed from the position, but in, you know, some kind of amazing way. Yeah. So Krishna would come into the world in the incarnation of Vidura and work very hard as a great devotee, because he's already working hard to manage, right? So now he gets to preach. Such a devotee is neither a Shudra nor a Brahmana. He is transcendental to such divisions of mundane society. Just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead assumes his incarnation as a hog, but he is still neither a hog nor a Brahma. He is above all mundane creatures. The Lord and his different authorized devotees sometimes have to play the role of many lower creatures to claim the conditioned souls. But both the Lord and his pure devotees are always in the transcendental position. The conclusion is that Vidura was never a Shudra, but was greater than the purest type of Brahmana. Because it's not only he knows Brahman, he knows transcendence. So we see he does the duties within that side, within the ashram side. Right, so within the renounced order, he can preach, he can do those. But he doesn't do the duties within the Kshatriya order, even though he's transcendental. Does that make sense? So the freedom is in ashram. You know, you situate yourself, and then you have the freedoms afforded. But Varna, that has its specific thing, because it's skills and mentality, like we mentioned before. That sense of possession makes one unable to actually function in certain ways. Does that make sense? Like we said, the attachment to money makes a business person unfit by mentality to practice the skill of education. Not that they can't do it. I know many of them. They run fabulous schools. Like I know one devotee, his brother used to run a school. I mean, that guy made money. You know, I mean, he made money. It means back in the 80s, you wanted to get into school, you had to pay two lakhs unofficially just to get on the list.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and he had 10,000 students in his school. You know, you do the math. And that's just to get in. Then there's the tuition fees that naturally cover everything with profit.
Yes.
You know? Like that. So they can do a great job, and they turn out the students, and they come out, they know their skill well, they're good, you know, whatever it is like that. But the mentality that goes with it, that they're unable to teach because they don't have. Right? To make profit, yes. Right? So that's why the modern thing is you learn your skill to make profit, because it's the business runs the schools.
Yes. You're saying freedom is an ashram?
Freedom meaning this element that it doesn't matter what your physical psychological position is. You can be fully God conscious, yes. Uh-huh. And function within that and be a guru in instructing people in Krishna consciousness. Uh-huh. But the varna duties remain the same. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? And within ashram, you stay within the position that you have. You know what I'm saying? If you're a brahmachari and you're a guru, you still follow the practice of a brahmachari, though you're doing guru. If he's a grihasthi, he follows those. And he's guru. So in other words, the medium, the culture always stays, because if it doesn't stay, then how do you have Braj Leela, right? What if Mother Yashoda decided to go out into the forest for a walk at midnight? Is that going to work out in the pastimes? No, she's supposed to be asleep.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, so that's the whole thing. It won't work out if people don't do but it's natural duties according to their love. Here they're formalized because we don't have that love. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And Maharaj, since the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we are receiving a teaching from Kunti, from Bhishmadev. It's not a no one is a Brahmana.
Yeah, so far. I mean, of course, Sutta. We're hearing from Vyasadeva, yes. Sukadeva, and Sutta.
Yes.
Right? But at the same time, as when, they, like you say, the examples they give that carry the instruction,
yes.
then you know, you have it's generally amongst the kings and the great sages. Generally, the Puranas stick to that, and especially Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. But it also drops into other stories. His point is if it's a good story, it's used. But if it's not, then, you know what I'm saying, then it's just not used. Yeah. But it's true. That's the whole point, is that it doesn't matter, but you have to know how it doesn't matter. Just to use it politically or economically like that, then that's not how it doesn't matter. Because once you get into political and economics, you go into varna.
Yes.
Then the rules apply.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it's a medium for expressing Krishna consciousness, but it in itself is not direct.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Brahminical occupation has the elements you're dealing with direct.
Yes.
Right? You know, if you're dealing deity worship, you know, teaching, like this kind of thing. So then it also is, that's why it's the senior most of the varnic duties. But those aspects can be done by anyone as long as they have the spiritual qualification. Like we said, someone's very devotionally developed, even though he may not be brahminical, he may be able to do puja all day, but that's because of his devotional qualification. You know what I'm saying? The person's a devotee. He's teaching, let's say, you know, at the VTE course, he's teaching the Bhakti Shastra, and things are going nice, and he's a good teacher and all that. Then something happens in his spiritual life, and he, you know, goes outside and, you know, gets a job. What's the possibility he might become? A teacher. You understand? So, therefore, that side stays. That's what's there. But let's say someone else wasn't from that kind of background. He comes in for the 2 weeks, teaches, and leaves. Right? And if he does something outside, it may not be as a teacher.
Yes.
You understand? So anybody can do on that transcendental level in a certain context.
Mm-hmm.
But to do it as an occupation, only those who have that ability can do, unless it's coming, unless it's brahminical and it's coming from devotional development. Like that. Otherwise, why cross the lines? Because we want to? Because we need to? We want to, that's whimsical. We need to, that's sinful. That's impious.
Really?
Mleches and yavanas need to break rules. Otherwise, how are you mleche and yavana?
Yeah.
You know, how do you prove you're mleche and yavana unless you break rules? They have to break rules. If you don't break rules, then you're, it's a problem. Unless, of course, you're the leader of society. Those guys don't break rules. In other words, I wouldn't have to tell this to the successful people in the material world. In fact, they understand. Okay. Okay, verses 16 to 28, Vidura's instructions to Dhritarashtra. In this section, Suta Goswami describes how Vidura preaches to Dhritarashtra, his elder brother, to give up his material attachments. Vidura pushes Dhritarashtra to immediately leave home and pursue self-realization. Suta Goswami continued, Vidura was treated like a godly person by his relatives, and when he sat down to instruct Dhritarashtra, all of the palace residents, including the Pandavas and their mother, gathered around to hear them, right? Not all the palace residents, including the, you know, the how you say, the maidservants and the, you know, no. Those are the ones that naturally gather around, and they're the ones that have the faith, that hear the Pandavas in that. You know what I'm saying? You want to have fun, see who comes to the class, right? Everybody will be there, but are your leaders there? That's the point. So here it's pointing out, even they were there. Such spiritual discourses are beneficial for all and are especially welcomed by exalted personalities like Maharaj Yudhishthira, who, although now the indisputable ruler of the surface of the world, right, surface of the world, not underneath, you know, somebody else has that one, was protected from Maya by the humble sincerity of his devotion to Lord Mukunda. But Yudhishthira's blind uncle Dhritarashtra was quite a different story. That's funny. The Sutta Goswami, right? Insurmountable, eternal time had imperceptibly overcome Dhritarashtra. He remained doggedly sunk in whatever family affairs remained after the death of his 100 sons on the war field of Kurukshetra. Because you would think that possibly he might, having lost all his sons, think, well, what's the use of family life and all these things? But it says he's doggedly holding on to whatever is left.
Yeah.
Like that. Vidura sarcastically addressed Dhritarashtra as king and sternly warned, please get out of here immediately, for fear has already overtaken you. Right? So he's king because, you know, he, you know, seemingly was emperor of the world. And they're treating him as if he still is, but he's not. Yudhishthira is. But he's the king of a city. That's all. You know, like in Europe you had like Italy and that, you had city states. You know, that's what he's king of.
Are they being nice or are they being sarcastic?
They're being nice.
Okay.
Vidura, because he's being sarcastic.
Okay.
They're brothers, he can do that. Right? He was his prime minister, so it's not that he can't do. Does that make sense? Ministers who's qualified to do it. King means you have to have those qualifications. Right? So he doesn't have those. Means if he was born and he had those qualifications, then he could do. You know, just like they're not really worried about, what do you call it? Karna. As he has Kshatriya characteristics, but the problem is his attitude is wrong. That's why the Pandavas then refer to him as a son of a Suta. But on the battlefield, they fight with him. If they actually believed he was a chariot driver, they wouldn't fight with him. You know. And so, but you know, in fighting, he's a Kshatriya. But in dealings, he acts like a Suta. You know, in this case. And Draupadi, because it's about ashram, not varna, right? Means marriage is an ashram dharma, not a varna dharma. So therefore, because that's where the weakness lies and why she should marry him. Because he's not of equal nature. You know, they'll take it that the others will take it that he means Kshatriya. She's just saying he doesn't have the good qualities. Right? Okay. This frightful situation cannot be remedied by anyone in this material world. Because now he doesn't have his sons. He's at the protection of his nephews, and who he's tried to kill, you know, for the last 100 years, right? For it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Kala, who has approached us all. Whoever is under the influence of eternal time must surrender his most dear life. So what to speak of other things such as wealth, honor, family, home, and property? One will give up all of these for life. Right? But he's saying even time will come and take life, so why want to take everything else? Now, it's already taken everything else, so why don't you think life is next? You know? In the purport to 1.13.20, we find this brilliant but sobering observation. A great Indian science, busy in the plan-making business, was suddenly called by invincible eternal time while going to attend a very important meeting of the Planning Commission. And he had to surrender his life, wife, children, house, land, wealth, etc. During the political upsurge in India and its division into Pakistan and Hindustan, so many rich and influential Indians had to surrender life, property, and honor due to the influence of time. And there are hundreds and thousands of examples like that all over the world, all over the universe, which are all effects of the influence of time. Therefore, the conclusion is that there is no powerful living being within the universe who can overcome the influence of time. Many poets have written verses lamenting the influence of time. Many devastations have taken place over the universes due to the influence of time, and no one could check them by any means. Right? There is nothing, no one is able to do. You can say, but it's just time makes it work. So, in other words, when we're going through here, we always have to remember there's this balance between the reality of what situation we're in, right? And then the pleasantries of, you know, Vaishnavas and the association, their association in Krishna consciousness, right? But the point is, the fact of the material world, the material situation, is exactly what it is. There is nothing nice about it, right? You know, Prabhupada said, you know, it's like we're... the body is like a car, and he said, and Prabhupada's pointing out, it's not a nice car. You know, even if it's a heavenly car, it's still not a nice car. Right? Because it's going to die at some point. Brahma, he only lives 100 of his own years. He has to surrender that body. In the spiritual world, you don't, so you can't call it nice. You know, like that. So, yeah. So this balance, that sometimes it'll talk about the reality like this. Now this is going to be, you know, we've heard these very nice and very sweet elements, technical elements and all that. Now we're going to hear about the reality of the world. Right? And that'll come up again and again throughout as we go through the cantos. It'll come up. But that's real. It's not, oh, that's fanatic. No, that's real. But the point is the real situation is the spiritual world. Therefore, that's nice. And so our relationship with the devotees is based on that. Does that make sense? So then it's nice, it's sweet, it's wonderful.
Yes.
But if we accept this material world is a place of misery, then we can actually function in the society of devotees and think that's nice. Otherwise, then we're going to think something material is nice. Mm-hmm. Right? We're going to use material, you know, these material social things, economic things, etiquette, dress, food, anything we're going to use based on that.
Yes.
Right? It's not that, yes, I know how to cook this. I want to cook for Krishna and I know how to cook this, so I'll offer this to Krishna. It's no, I like this. Mm-hmm. And why I should eat that. You know? Mm-hmm. I'm a Westerner. Why I should eat Indian food. Right? Yeah, drive down the street. How many restaurants are Indian, Lebanese, Mexican? You know? Yeah. Like that. You know, so many others. So, you know, what is your food? You know, I remember I thought it was very funny. We were in Italy, you know, in the north. And then something comes up about the pizza. And I mentioned something that's a totally bona fide, you know, aspect of pizza. And the person's comment with me is like, oh, that's not pizza. This is the Italian, because in other words, what's right there in their region that their mother cooks, yeah, that's pizza. And what the next guy does, you know, across on the other side of the mountain, that's not actually pizza. You know what I'm saying? So I mean, so what is the food? You know, you understand? Yes. What is the clothes? What are these things? What does it mean? So it means this is what I'm attached to. Okay, engage in the Lord's service. But it's not about what we're attached to. That's what we'll be going through again and again and again. The material situation, there's nothing good about the material world. The only useful thing is this ability to be engaged in the Lord's service. That's his use. Other than that, there's nothing that's nice. Even the pious stuff is not nice, because it won't give you Krishna. Connecting something to Krishna, that's what's useful. So it's not about the thing, it's about the connection. Right? So that's what the Bhagavatam's doing. Because the Gita was showing much of the Gita how to connect whatever your situation is to the Lord. But at the end of the Gita, it says it's not about that, it's about the Lord. Right? So then, so Sarva Dharmam, give up all these other religions. Because here it means, you know, we call it Grihastha Dharma, Brahmachari Dharma, right? Brahminical Dharma, Kshatriya Dharma. So that means anything that one does, one has a job, that's a dharma. There's a nature of that. Right? You drive a car, there's a dharma. There's a nature. Right? So all these dharmas have to be given up to just surrender to Krishna. It doesn't mean you don't use them, but it can't be about the dharma. It's got to be about Krishna. So Bhagavatam opens with that. So we notice that, you know, one would think, you know, you get down to this pure devotional element, it'll gradually be introduced, and as you go through the cantos, it gets more and more to the 10th canto, then, you know, it comes out. No, it's from page 1, it's about pure devotional service, and there's nothing else in this book. Right? Now within pure devotional service, now we'll take it from wherever we are up to, you know, the Braja Prema. Is that okay?
It's a good book.
Good book, yeah. The question, would it be the good book?
I think it could be.
It might be.
Yeah, I think so.
We might have a winner.
I think.
Okay. So then, yeah. So then, yeah, afternoon class today. And then, depending upon if we get the material the printer is able to produce, then it will be, we'll start with the Lego Bhagavatamrita. If not, we'll continue hearing about hogs, dogs, camels, and asses.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Sarvadeta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Chaitanya Gaura Prema.
I'm a bit confused about the difference between Niti and because it seems that they're both looking at the result.
Yeah, so one is looking at immediate result. Artha is looking at a result, a more sustainable result.
But that's supposed to be dharma.
Dharma is what is the activities that you should be doing. If you're looking at it from what results I'll get, that'll be more passion, not dharma. Just like passion, goodness and passion, the activities are the same. It's the mentality. Niti is just the art of applying it. Dharma is the main, is the overall science that covers all aspects. Art is just how to, you know, basically socially prosper. Does that make sense? So it's an aspect of Dharma, but if it's not based on Dharma, it doesn't work. It's from Dharma comes Artha.
So it's taking into account the Dharma.
Yeah, of course. It has to be. It's not necessarily selfish purpose, but it's, you're looking at the point of profit rather than just what you're supposed to do. What is your position in society? What are you supposed to be doing? Like that. artist and how is you know practically how to do it, but also from the scientific point of view and some of the you know practical other aspects. Niti is just the art of application. It has a science, but it's about being able to apply it. Because Niti has to be, I mean, so we all have to be practical, of course, but Niti, you get into that you can't say this, you can't say that. And it's just like, by Niti, how I speak in this class is not a good way to attract people. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Because it's just sometimes too strong, too harsh. You know what I'm saying? So by Niti, that's a fault. You know what I'm saying? That's it. By Dharma, not necessarily. Because, you know, we're having a class here, it's not an official class in the temple that you're obliged to go to. You know, so we set the price. You know, Prabhupada says, you know, you go to the market, they set the price, they come to your house, you set the price. Right? You know, so there. We are dealing with, it's understood it's a course, so it's study. So then one can be strong on these points. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, it's then when you have guests that come. Like that, it is ideal. It's not as strong, you know, yes. Like that. But the problem is because it's dealing with, you know, points of issue, and the difficulty is because they will create so much, you know, material or spiritual or both havoc. Then we speak very strongly about them and bluntly because most people don't oppose them at all. As soon as you say equality, everybody throws their hands up and goes, yes. But it's not about that. What does that mean, equal? You know, you have to know what is equal and what's not equal. You know, just like that point. You know, is a devotional or a religious usher or what's it compared to? What is he compared to? Or a materialistic Brahmin, I think it was. Are they, who's superior? So the demigods gave their opinion. You know. But Brahma says, no, there's no difference. You know, it means, of course, they're coming from a different position, but the whole point is it ultimately comes back to the same thing. Is you're religious, but you're materialistic. Just one starts from religion and moves to materialism, one starts from materialism and moves to religion. You know? At the same time, is they're different because the one has faith and the other doesn't. So that then therefore puts the Ursher with faith into another category that the Brahmin who is materialistic can't grasp. So the demigods said they're the same. Because they are the same on one level, if you look at it mechanically. But since faith is actually the basis of everything, therefore you can't say they're equal. Because the one has faith in the materialism, the other has faith in the higher elements. So that way, then, they're not the same at all. Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that, you have to see what's there. So from that side, it's not ideal, but you know what to do. We're trying.
I think it's working out nicely. Hey, that's me.
The challenging course.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because the point is, it's about Krishna consciousness, so it's supposed to be attractive. So the element is that we're working on the element of attraction, but working on the element of attraction from Krishna as tattva. You know, that is reality, you know, distinguished from illusion. So, you know what I'm saying? The situation means that intellectually you can understand what is real and what's not. That aspect is attractive. You know, so for those who appreciate that as a method or that makes them comfortable, yes. then it's great.
Yes.
for those who are more into it, it's more the presentation, it's more the all these kind of things, then they won't be comfortable. Like that. It's just, you know, that the point is just, so that comfortableness, then somebody are dealing with that. This side, then, is not so much. So therefore, it goes on in this way. I'm sure when we get to Chaitanya Charitamrita, it'll get nicer. Because you associate a very nice device. I mean, we're already associating here, but then it's in a context that we'd have to relate to. Like here you can say, hey, this is the Vedic. There is, no, that's Gaudiya, that's us.
Yeah.
There for a 12-year course. Yes. Because that's the standard. 12 years is considered the standard to be thoroughly educated. I mean, here we don't have any ashram situation, so it's not the ideal. You know, eventually, not gonna happen. So you just have the classes. But then, you know, because we have the temple program, everything else to back it up, so it will have effect. Right then. That makes sense.
Very much.
Yeah. You know, so since it's about facts, then Bhagavatam also gives facts. Yeah. So it's just a matter of what facts you find impressive, that's all.
And relevant.
Yeah. And then how much, how much to go, the emotional element. Because I've talked with others who have no problem with dealing with it, but the point of this is it's been said. You don't need to keep saying it, you know. Mm-hmm. So now it's practical. How are you going to apply that? They want to immediately go to that. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, the conversation goes much quicker. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, you simply make the point that, you know, this is materialistic or this is wrong. Okay, now what? Mm-hmm. Right, because you don't, in other words, you don't have to convince them, but it has to be practical. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have all these different kind of, so what works, I hope. Nobody feels too badly. So.